You're listening to the Cross-Cutting Concerns podcast. I'm your host, Matt Groves. Please visit the site at crosscuttingconcerns.com, where you can subscribe, browse the archives, contact me, read show notes, and leave a comment. I'm recording this podcast on June 30th, 2016. My guest today is a senior developer with CoreDial and a longtime friend, Coral Rausch. How are you?
I'm doing very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on.
It's good to hear from you again. I haven't seen you in a while, so I'm glad you could be on the show. You've been using Erlang for a while, and I hear a lot about Erlang, but can you tell me what Erlang is?
Yeah, sure. Erlang is a language that was really built primarily for the telecom industry. It was written by some engineers at Ericsson back when they were building some of their new phone switches back in 1986 was when they first built this thing. And their goal was really just to write a new language that was really designed around fault-tolerant distributed systems. They were trying to build in a few different languages, and they were having trouble finding something that really fit their domain model. So they ended up writing a new language. They actually originally built this up in Prolog, ended up building a whole virtual machine for it. So they designed this new language for their telecom systems, which really have a few major criteria they have to meet. They need this thing to be pretty much online all the time, and this is handling phone calls. You can't have these things going down. If people need to make 911 calls, emergency calls, you expect this thing to be reliable. So They needed something that was going to be very fault tolerant and needs to be able to have all kinds of concurrent things happening at once. And beyond the software, they need multiple instances of the hardware as well. So this thing has to be fault tolerant not only within a single machine, but across multiple machines. The goal was, we need this thing to be reliable. It's got to have everything isolated, be very fault tolerant.
At Couchbase, we build at least part of the product using Erlang, and Couchbase is very much the same way. It's a fault-tolerant, distributed, NoSQL database. Now, how long have you been using Erlang, and what have you been building with it?
So I've been using Erlang, I want to say close to 6 years now. Wow. I picked it up when I was sort of doing my functional programming language pilgrimage back, I guess about 5 or 6 years ago. And I found it when I was looking into things like Haskell, and I happened to stumble across Erlang as well. They were both excellent things to learn. Haskell was a bit heady and a little academic. Erlang was a language built to get things done, so I think I really picked up on that and just ran with it. And after a while, when I got into my job at CoreDial, I hadn't had too many opportunities to get it right off the bat, but eventually we started building a system that was all about, let me back up a little bit. CoreDial is a hosted VoIP provider, basically. We sell white-labeled VoIP hosting.
Okay.
So we've got a whole lot of phones and a whole lot of switches, and we wanted to build a live, close to real-time API for monitoring that, showing active phone calls, showing the status of people's extensions, showing how calls are moving through a call center queue, that sort of thing. And we wanted this thing to be up, process events, and we have a lot of endpoints and everything on here, so we needed this to scale a lot. We actually originally built this in Python, hit a few roadblocks doing that. Basically, some of the hurdles we came into was it's difficult to keep a Python process running, especially a multi-threaded Python process. If threads die, they don't really have a habit of telling anything. So parts of the system would go down, it would be unreliable, and just performance-wise too, because Python's sort of limited to single core with the way the Python's built with its global interpreter lock. Everything's firing through one central location, which is running on one core. There's ways around that, but they're kind of just as much of a headache as dealing with threads. So we were looking for a new solution there. And all those bullet points we ticked off there, okay, we need this to be reliable. It's got to be able to handle errors and be able to restart and come back up and continue working. If something does go wrong, ideally we don't want that impacting different customers. If one customer has their call center up, they're watching that, some other customer has theirs, and we have some fault there which affects maybe one phone or one customer in particular, we don't want that to impact everyone else. And that was, again, something we were having trouble with the old system. But all those main bullet points there, it's exactly what we found Erlang provides for us. It's fault tolerant. Every process runs in its own isolated space. There is nothing shared between processes.
So it sounds like you're using it for pretty much what they designed it for, phone systems.
Yeah, I mean, that too. That was a great selling point, especially with management saying, okay, we want to try out this new technology. Here's all the things it gives us. Here's all the things we're struggling with keeping this thing running, with dealing with errors, and with even with knowing what's going on with it. or running Python processes, you can't really inspect that while it's running live to see what's going on. And then we look at Erlang and we see, okay, it's got all the fault tolerance we want. It'll let us set up all of our processes, build up a whole, basically a supervision tree, so we can monitor how everything's going, make sure things restart when things fail. We've got the ability to go into the system while it's running, see how things are going, replace code or inspect processes as they're running, which is a tremendous gain there. And yeah, as a bonus, it was proven in telecom, and while it's a relatively new language and framework to a lot of people, it's actually been around for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, Erlang was built, again, back in 86. They finished their switch in 1998, I think, launched that. They were solving problems that telco was having back then with scale, with concurrent applications, with basically millions of requests being handled simultaneously, the sort of things that we're starting to see a lot now in web applications and also just general desktop applications now with cores and everything scaling up.
Sure. So if I wanted to get started using Erlang, if I wanted to write a Hello World program, for instance, could you recommend some resources?
Absolutely. One of the first resources I found was a site called Learn Use Some Erlang, which is written by Fred Haber. It's available free to read online. You can download a free ebook as well. You can also purchase a physical book if you want to support him. It's an excellent reference for getting started. It steps through all the main things with working with Erlang and getting something going with there. If you want to go a little bit beyond that, there's a book that's actually released fairly recently called Designing for Scalability with Erlang OTP, which it starts off with some of the basics and then goes a bit further with how you'll actually want to structure things within Erlang.
Okay.
And actually the entire second half of the book, which is a fantastic part of that too, is it'll go really into the design of just the general design of distributed applications.
I'll add some links to that in the show notes so you guys can go out there and check out those resources.
Actually, I'll add just one more to that.
Sure.
There's the beginner site, howistart.org, and there's an Erlang entry there, again written by Fred Haber, the Learn You Some Erlang guy, where he actually steps you step-by-step through building an initial application, and just to spice it up a bit, and rather than your standard Hello World, he actually chose to re-implement the console that Homer Simpson used in his episode where he was sitting home fat in a moo-moo and couldn't leave, and he had that simple application to just manage the nuclear plant for him from home.
Well, that sounds fun.
Mm-hmm.
So what are some other comparable tools to Erlang, some of its competitors, and what makes Erlang, you've mentioned a lot of the great characteristics of it, but what makes Erlang stand out from the competition?
When it comes to competing languages and technologies, honestly, there's not been too much I've seen that really quite matches up. There are some similar things, though, and I'll step through some of those. The most prominent I can think of is Akka, which is a framework set up for Scala, which is a language that runs on the Java virtual machine.
Mm-hmm.
It was actually very heavily inspired by Erlang, so you have a lot of the same things going on. You've got your lightweight processes. It's built around the actor model, which is basically what Erlang provides for you, where you have these individual processes. They're not sharing any state. They're communicating solely by message passing. So you can build a lot of that out in there. Other languages I know have a strong concurrency model. I mean, Go comes to mind. It's got a lot of the same strong basic concurrency primitives in place. The lightweight processes, I believe they've got, I think they call them channels, to communicate between those processes. I don't know that it has the same level of process supervision and error handling necessarily that Erlang provides, or some of the distributed communications that Erlang provides, but there are definitely tools out there. A lot of this stuff is really just distributed programming in general, so if you don't have Erlang per se, you can get a lot of the same benefits from really just gluing other tools together. I mean, gluing different processes together with things like RabbitMQ, getting message bus protocols involved, keeping your individual applications isolated and simple. And actually, one more thing I'll add as far as comparable languages to Erlang. Aside from Go and Akka, you've also got Elixir, which has been getting very popular lately, which is actually another language implemented on top of the Erlang virtual machine.
Mm.
It was initially written by Jose Valim, one of the main contributors to, I believe, Ruby on Rails, with the intent of taking Erlang, something that he'd found and found very interesting, and really wanting to bring some of those great benefits of the Ruby language onto it, and it's attracted a wide amount of developers from the Ruby community, the Ruby on Rails community, into the Erlang ecosystem. So it's a fresh language with maybe a more approachable syntax for some that still reaps all the benefits of the Erlang virtual machine.
Now, you sent me a link for a video on YouTube called Erlang the Movie, and I've watched a bit of it. It's a bit bizarre, and stay with me here. This is going to be maybe obscure reference for some of you, but it reminded me of some of the old Sega CD full motion video games, like Night Trap or Sewer Shark and things like that. So what's the deal with this video?
That is a fantastic video. It's basically a promotional video that Ericsson put out back in around 1990 when they had just built the Erlang language and were promoting it a bit. I imagine internally, because I don't think it was used externally.
I hope not.
Yeah, I don't think it was used externally a lot until much later when they eventually open sourced it. But it's really extolling all the benefits they're getting from using the Erlang language. You see them very awkwardly and very datedly showing them put phone calls through their Erlang-enabled phone switch. But interestingly, I mean, you're seeing them actually trace these calls in a live running environment, so that's one fantastic feature of Erlang shown there. And live tracing is an amazing feature for any operations team, honestly, to be able to just go in and literally see step-by-step what's going through the system. They even perform a live code upgrade there where they demonstrate a code failure, update one, while the system's still running, and towards the very end, they'll point out, hey, we've had a phone call that we started early in the video that's been going the whole time, which then shows you that, hey, that failure was isolated in a process that did not affect anything else running within the system, and everything was cool. So it's definitely a fun video. I'm pretty sure the guys are fairly embarrassed of it whenever it tends to come up, but it still does manage to show a lot of really cool features in Erlang.
Yeah, it's definitely worth a watch. Even if, you know, you're not a developer or not interested in Erlang, it's some very awkward looking, they're most obviously engineers or developers that are doing this video. They're not actors or anything. So it's very awkward, lots of pausing, and it's really just fun to watch. I'll put a link to that video in the show notes as well, so you can go check that out. Is there anything else you'd like to plug before we wrap up the show?
I would say definitely check out the Erlang community. It's very active. It's not huge at the moment, but it's still a very active, very friendly community. You'll find a lot of people on IRC. They've got a channel on Freenode. They also have a Slack room for anyone who prefers Slack, and I believe their mailing list is pretty active as well. If anyone wants to find me, I'm probably easiest to get a hold of and track down on Twitter. And in case anyone happens to be in the Pittsburgh area in August, I'll be at the Abstractions Conference there from August 18th to 20th. And actually, Joe Armstrong, one of the engineers behind Erlang, will also be there, as well as Jose Valim, the creator of Elixir.
My guest today has been Coral Rausch. Thank you for being on the show.
Thanks very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
This has been the Cross-Cutting Concerns Podcast, produced and recorded by Matt Groves, 2016. If you enjoyed this episode, please share it on social media and leave a review on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you downloaded this podcast. For show notes, please go to crosscuttingconcerns.com. This episode is recorded under the Creative Commons Attribution 4.0 license. The hosting for this podcast is made possible in part by Microsoft. It was recorded and mixed with the help of Skype and Audacity. The theme music is by The Dirty Truckers. You can buy their music on Amazon or iTunes.
One of the first resources I found...
You've been drinking.
I did have a scotch and a bourbon, so... it was an hour ago. You'd think I'd be better off by now, but you know I'm lightweight.